Good evening. I got the I got this right this time. Small steps forward. Good to see all of y'all out this evening. We're in the book of Genesis, as you can see from the screen, and we're in chapter 3 this evening. Before we get into chapter 3, I wanted to do a little bit of a review, cover a few things that we've already covered. As you can see from the chart, the book of Genesis covers the first four periods of the 17 periods of the Waldron outline, and of course we're in the before the flood part. We talked about Sunday when we were talking about the creation, how that each one of the days, except for maybe Tuesday, followed a particular pattern where God said, "Let there be light, let there be light," and it would become so. So much power that he could speak things into existence. And at the end of the day, he would evaluate it, and of course it was good, because he is good, and therefore all of his fruit of his labors are good. And the time frame would be the evening and the morning would be the first day, second day. It wasn't eons of time, it was regular days like we would count them today. Creation days, and you can see kind of a building block pattern there, light, firmament, etc. God rested on the seventh day, and of course, as we talked about, God wasn't tired. He still held everything together by his power. But he had completed the work that he had set out to do. God breathed. We talked about this a little bit on Sunday. And in particular, Genesis 2 and verse 7, it says, "And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being." The idea behind this chart came about a couple of weeks ago when we had the monthly singing, and Scott had several different readings for us that evening from the book of Job. And one of those readings was chapter 27 and in verse 3. And it said there, "As long as my breath is in me and the breath of God in my nostrils." And it made me think of what we read there in Genesis chapter 2. Indeed, the breath that we have comes from God. Everything that we have, every good and perfect gift comes from God. It's not our own. In Acts 17, verse 25, it says, Paul was talking to the Athenians there about God. They were idol worshipers, but he talks to them about God and says he is not worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And of course, that matches right up. And then the psalmist in 104 and verse 29, talking about God's creation, he says, "God, if you hide your face, they're all troubled. You take away their breath, they die and return to their dust." And so that matches up very well with what we see in Genesis, that God gives us breath, and man and the animals, anyways, came from dust. Any questions about that? Okay. Be fruitful. We talked about this a little bit also on Sunday, where it said to be fruitful and multiply. Well, God commanded that in the first chapter to the water animals and birds, and also to man. He wanted them to fill up the earth. And he also said that in Genesis chapter 8 and Genesis chapter 9 to the animals that were coming off the ark, and to Noah and his children. Again, after everything was destroyed, he wanted the earth populated again. And he wanted them to go about doing that. Being fruitful and multiply is used as a blessing. Isaac said that to Jacob in Genesis chapter 28, that wished for him really that he would have a large family. And also it was used as a promise to God's people in Jeremiah chapter 23, where they were promised that they would be able to come back from Babylonian captivity and be fruitful and multiply. So that phrase is used in several different places in a few different ways. We talked about how different the earth was during Adam and Eve's time as it is compared to us. No human structures of any kind, no houses, no roads, nothing like that. But it was a perfect environment that God had given them. He created for them the Garden of Eden. They had everything they needed for food. They had everything they needed to drink. They had work to do. They had everything they needed to see who God was and so that they could worship Him. Again, it was great. They had every tree pleasing to the sight and good for food. There was also the tree of life there and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And we'll talk about that, both of those, more tonight. Where was the Garden of Eden? Well, we don't know exactly. We know that the Bible mentions about four different rivers that were close to there. The Pishon, the Gihon, the Tigris or Hiddekel, and the Euphrates. But we also know that the earth has changed considerable in that amount of time, about 6,000 years ago. And there's no telling how much difference the flood made to the surface of the earth. God created it all for man. And we see in Genesis chapter 1 how God set man over all of the animals. He put them under man's dominion. And He created the herbs and the fruit trees for man to eat from. And so He created it all for man. And then the biggest thing that I wanted us to get on Sunday was that we were created in the image of God. And so that is supposed to be our goal each day, to be in the likeness of God, in His true righteousness and holiness. And of course, tonight we'll talk about how man didn't live up to that. Okay, any questions about what we have covered so far? Again, I'd love for this to be interactive. If you have a comment or a question to ask, please feel free in doing that. Just speak up. Okay, as we go through the lesson today, I really want to go through the story twice. I want to go through the story the first time fairly quick and just tell the simple story as it is as we read it there in Genesis chapter 3. And then the next time through, I want us to put more meat on the bone, as it were, make more application of what we read there in Genesis chapter 3. So beginning in the first few verses there of Genesis chapter 3, we see Satan in the form of a serpent. And he's talking to Eve, and he asks her a question. He says, "Has God indeed said, 'You shall not eat of every tree of the garden?'" Kind of a leading question there to get her to thinking. Did he actually ask you that or tell you that? What we see from Eve here at the first is very beautiful. She knew exactly the answer that she should give. She said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, 'You shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die.'" So she was spot on. She knew exactly what God had said for them to do. And if she had left it there, that story would have turned out a whole lot different, wouldn't it? But we know that there was more to it. And so Satan, the devil, was not happy with this situation. He knew he could go a little bit further, maybe tempt her a little bit harder. She knew what God said, but he lies to her. He tries to deceive her. He says, "You will not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And we'll talk a little bit more about the lie that he tells her here and how deceptive he is being and how he is trying to make everything look so good that God has said, "Don't touch." If Eve had just stopped with, "God said not do it," but she allowed herself to think about this a little more. "What this serpent telling me, is it true instead of what God said?" She saw that the fruit was good for food. Who told her that? God didn't tell her that. She saw that the fruit was pleasant to the eyes. And she saw that the fruit was going to make her wise. And again, who told her that? God didn't tell her that. So she partook of the fruit. And again, you know, we've all heard the story of how she took an apple. I don't know what kind of fruit it was. But she took of the fruit. She gave some to Adam, and he ate it too. This led to shame. something that they had never had before. It did open their eyes to evil. There had never been evil around them before. And their eyes are open to that. And they saw now that they were naked and they sew fig leaves. Again, I want to go back to a point we talked about a little bit on Sunday, that these aren't the ignorant, knuckle-dragging men that you sometimes see in science books. These were intelligent people who could speak. They could sew. They could. They had communication with each other. They could talk to each other. They have conversation with God. They have conversation here with this serpent. So they were intelligent. What they did here was not smart. Far from being smart. But they were intelligent beings. And because of what they did, there was shame, there was guilt. And so they tried to hide that guilt from God. God comes into the garden and they hear God coming, and so they hide. God asked, "Where are you?" Now, do you think God actually didn't know where they were? Of course he knew where they were. But he was giving them an opportunity to speak up. And Adam, to his, he speaks the truth here. He speaks right up and says, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." He spoke the very truth there. God asked them two very simple and straightforward questions. Who told you you were naked? And secondly, have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you that you should not eat? Two very simple questions, very straightforward questions, and demanded really very simple answers, very straightforward answers. But of course, we know that that wasn't what they gave God. From then and from now on, it seems like man has been trying to blame somebody else for what they've done, the evil that they've done. And that's what Adam does. He tries to blame the woman. And we'll see that he tries to blame somebody else in a little bit. But he tries to blame Eve. He says, "The woman you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate." And Eve tried to blame the serpent. She said, "The serpent deceived me and I ate." Does it matter that somebody else deceives us? Especially if we know from the very beginning what God has already told us. We'll talk about that a little more too. There were consequences to this, and we'll talk about this considerably more in a little bit. But for Adam and Eve, the consequences were they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, and cherubim guarded the way to the Tree of Life. They no longer had access to the Tree of Life. Okay, so it's a very simple story, really. You start off with Satan in the form of a serpent talking to Eve, trying to get her to eat of this fruit that she knows that she is not supposed to eat of. She is 100% spot on about what God has said. She knows it completely. But she allows herself to listen to Satan, to the serpent, and to think about and to dwell on what he has said. And she gives in then to that temptation. Yes, sir. Very good. Rob was saying that the devil still uses the same tactics. A lot of false teaching in the world today, like the devil was trying to tell Eve something false back then. She gives in to the temptation. She eats of the fruit. She gives to Adam. He gives in to the temptation. He eats the fruit. And there were consequences for that. They were separated from God. They were kicked out of the garden. They were separated from this tree of life. Okay. Other questions or comments about that? Just the simple story there. Yes, sir. All right, very good. Brent was talking about it doesn't matter how much false doctrine is in something. If it's just 1%, it's false doctrine. If it's not what God said, it's false doctrine. So we need to remember that. Okay, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Okay, so let's talk about the context of this. Who are the main characters in this story? Well, we see that God is there and Adam and Eve are there, and we see the serpent or Satan is there in the garden. When was this? This was after creation. This was after the first 7 days, if you would, that we talked about on Sunday. It was before Cain and Abel. We'll talk about Cain and Abel in the next chapter in Genesis chapter 4. Brent will be covering chapters 4 and 5 on Sunday. And if you take a look at chapter 4, it says, "Now Adam knew his wife," after these events occur in chapter 3. So it's before Cain and Abel and before Seth. Of course, as the Waldrons have it, it's before the flood. And just for a little bit extra to know about the time period there, Seth wasn't born until Adam was 130 years old. And if I read the context right, at the end of chapter 4, it doesn't seem like Seth was born until Abel was killed by Cain. So, how long did they live in the Garden of Eden? I don't know. I know it's less than 130 years. And pretty certain it was before Cain and Abel were born that they were kicked out. So was it one day after the creation? Was it 100 years later? I don't know. But there is that time period there you can look back on. And of course, they are in the Garden of Eden, and as we've talked about, just the perfect, perfect environment to live in. And they put that all, they lost that. Okay, so the story outline is very simple. There is the deception. There is the sin. There is the shame and the guilt that comes from that. And then there are the consequences. This story goes on even today, or at least this story outline does, doesn't it? Even in our lives at time, this same simple outline could fit to a lot of different occasions. The deception. Going back to that leading question, has God indeed said, "You shall not eat of every tree of the garden"? The devil was trying to get Eve to think about the one thing that she couldn't do instead of all the things that she could do. She had all those trees and all those herbs that she could eat, but there was this one tree that she couldn't eat from, and the devil said, "Why don't you eat of that one?" I've got 2 grandkids. Jude is 2 years old, and Coda is 0 years old. And it doesn't matter. Jude can be in a room that is completely full of toys, lots of stuff to play with. But if Coda comes crawling over there and grabs one, Jude has to have that one thing that he can't have. I don't think they're much different than most kids. And unfortunately, I don't think it's much different than we are as adults sometimes. We see there's that one thing that we can't have, and we just got to have it. And that's how it turns out for Eve here. The serpent is also trying to cause doubt to enter Eve's mind. Has God really said this? He wouldn't want to hold you back from something that you would really want, would he? God would want you to be happy, wouldn't he? I mean, how many times have we heard, you know, expressions like that? She answers the question so well. She is directly head on the answer. So she knows exactly what's expected of her, and if she had just left it there, it would have been great. But she didn't. The devil goes on to say, "You will not surely die, for God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And like Brent was bringing up about the partial truths there, the devil has given her a partial truth. Their eyes are going to be opened. They are going to know evil now that they hadn't known before. Jesus was talking to the Pharisees in John chapter 8, and he says there, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. He was a murderer from the beginning. He was a liar from the beginning, an accuser from the beginning." That's who Satan is. And that's what she was going against. If there's just a little bit of truth in there, it makes the deception that much easier. Okay? And so Satan tries to get us to reason within ourselves, tries to get us to justify our actions to ourselves. I think it was Steve who was saying in one of his lessons Sunday that we can come up with a gazillion ways to justify our actions when we want to do something to us. We can justify it to us, but of course, that just doesn't justify it before God. Very good. Very good. Mr. Richter mentioned that before she even ate it, she touched it. And she had already said, we're not even supposed to touch it. So that's a good point. Okay, the sin. Again, she allows herself to think about this deception that the devil has put out in front of her. And isn't that the problem that we have sometimes, is that we know what God wants. And if we just leave it at that and don't think about what might be put out in front of us, just leave it alone, we'd be good. But she didn't do that. She saw that the food was good. If you turn to 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 and 16, it says there, "Do not love the world or the things of in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." For this one moment in time, she loved the world more than she loved God. She saw that the fruit was good for food, lust of the flesh. Pleasant to the eyes, love of the eyes. Make one wise, pride of life. And again, who was it who told her that that was going to be the case? It wasn't God. So Eve took and ate in direct opposition to what God had told her, in direct opposition to what she knew to be truth. In this case, she believed Satan more than she believed God. Yes, sir. Very good. Lorenzo talking about how the temptation to be like God. and so wouldn't need him anymore. Yes, sir, Rob? Very good. God has given us everything that we need. Okay, very good. Eve gave the fruit to Adam, and he ate it in direct opposition to God. He knew that. In Matthew 10, verses 36 and verse 37, it says, "And a man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." So, even if our closest family tries to get us to do something that we ought not do, we shouldn't do that. We should love God more than anybody. And whether this was Adam's love for Eve, or this was Adam's love or desire to eat that fruit, or both, either way, he gave in to the temptation when he knew all along that he shouldn't do that. Each of us have our own desires. And in James 1, it says, each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. And that's what happens on this occasion, and it happens on every occasion when sin is involved. We're tempted by something. And each one of us may have different things that tempt us. But we can be tempted. And if we give in to that, we can be separated from God also. The cover-up. We already talked about the first couple of these. But until this time, they had not known evil. Yes. The devil said, "You will be like God, knowing good and evil." Well, until this time, they had not known evil. And I think after this, they really wish they had never known it. Until this time, they had not known guilt or shame. Until this time, there had been no sin. Until this time, there was no reason for Jesus to have to come into this world to give himself for sin. Okay? They hid from God. And that's kind of crazy, isn't it? To think, how am I going to hide from my Creator who knows everything there is to know about me? In Psalms chapter 139 and verses 1 through 12, I'm not going to read everything here, but I'd like to read a few of the verses. The first paragraph says, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. You know where I've been. You know where I'm going. You know where I sat down. You know where I got up at. You know my thoughts." I can't get away from God. I can't hide from Him. "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there." And so the obvious answer to the question is, I can't go anywhere to hide from Him. "If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you." It just seems like sometimes we'll get in our house, we'll close the window, we'll close the shades, we'll close the door, we'll turn out the light, and we think, nobody can see me now. I'm not going to hurt anybody else. What I'm fixing to do is not going to hurt anybody. Of course, we know that's wrong. And of course, we know that God's going to see us no matter where we're at. God asked those two simple questions. And of course, we talked about how Adam tried to blame it on Eve. but it looks like he's trying to blame it a little bit on God himself, where he says, the woman you gave me. What other woman was there? This is the only woman. The woman you gave me caused me to eat this. If you hadn't given her to me, then I wouldn't have done this. The serpent deceived me and I ate. You know, you used to hear the phrase, the devil made me do it. I don't know if you hear that much anymore or not. But it really doesn't matter who tells us what, right? God has told us what we want. And so that's where we need to be looking for answers. We can't blame anybody else. The consequences, and there were quite a few. For the serpent, cursed more than all cattle and move on its belly. Mr. Waldron in the book makes the point that if this is a curse for the serpent, then at some point the serpent must have been able to go about some other way than on its belly. Maybe it had legs. I don't know. You're going to eat dust all your life. It would be enmity between the serpent and the woman, enmity between the serpent and the woman's seed. The woman's seed would bruise the head of the serpent, and the serpent would bruise the heel of the woman's seed. And of course, we know that this is the first mention of the salvation that we're going to have through Christ. That Jesus is the woman's seed that's being referred to here, and that his heel would be bruised on the cross, and he would bruise the head of the serpent as he died and was raised again. Consequences for Eve, and sorrow would be multiplied in pain. She would bear children, desire for her husband, and her husband would rule over her. And again, we can see that the beginnings of these things occurred with Eve. And then the consequences for man, really, the consequences were he's going to have to work a whole lot harder than he ever had before. Yes, he was working in the garden. He was supposed to be tending the Garden of Eden. But we see how that from the sweat of his brow, he was going to be eating bread the rest of his days. And I think that's referring to hard labor there. And we're still doing that. There were more consequences than that. They were kicked out of the garden, no more access to the tree of life. And they no longer had the same relationship with God. Can you imagine God in the cool of the day coming into the garden to speak to you? Just a fantastic, unimaginable situation. Great. And they lost that. Their sin had separated them from God. And in Romans chapter 5, verses 12 and 13, it says, therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men, because all sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. And so this was the beginning of death. And no, we're not judged for Adam's sin. We have our own sins to be judged for, but this was the beginning of death. Okay, any questions or comments then? Just a few quick applications. We too can be deceived, even if we know the truth. In 2 Corinthians 11, and verse 3, it says, but I fear lest somehow as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. As we've talked about several times, most of the time, I think, we get involved in sin not because we don't know what God has said to us, but because we give in to our own will instead of God's. Yes, it's possible to sin because we don't know God's word. In my case, and I'm sure that most of you would probably agree, most of the time I get into it because of my own stubborn will. And it says, Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. I'm trying to help you out, Eve. I'm trying to make you to be more like God. And of course, we know that he's no angel of light. Okay, and we will die spiritually, Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. Some verses that we're all very familiar with. Any other comments or questions? Yes, sir. Very good. Very good. A point that I was meant to make was the end result was the separation from God. It was a spiritual death. I think he tries to make Eve think it's a physical death. You're not going to die a physical death. Well, she didn't right then and there. But the spiritual death, that came about. Very good. All right. Just Genesis is a book of beginnings, a book of first. Even in chapter 3, there are quite a few things that we could list that are beginning here. And you may come up with your own list that maybe even has a few more. Some things that are beginning. The first lie. You know, sometimes we think about Genesis chapter 3 and it's the first sin. And most of the time we're thinking of Adam and Eve. Well, the serpent lied, didn't he? That to me is the first thing. Again, just quite a few things that start here in chapter 3. Thank you for your participation. Sunday morning, Lord willing, Brent will be teaching us from chapters 4 and 5. Thank you.